Welcome to the Best Self Podcast. There she is, Samantha Criss.
In the flesh, y'all.
Oh man, are we lucky to have you, sister? You've got you've got an amazing story. You started out working with a drug counselor at age 19. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was an addictions counselor fresh out of school. That was my first job.
That's
my first
nuts.
Real job.
Yeah. Right. That's nuts. Cause you're also working with people that have probably been addicted over 19 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you go from there to the obvious choice, wedding planner.
Obvious, right?
Yeah. I mean, that seems like the obvious step. And then you're marketing, and then you start your own thing, and incredible. I was so excited for you when the Goldcast opportunity came up. When I saw you get that, I was like, oh man, I want to be Samantha. That would be cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. So, man, so many things that I would love to kind of piggyback on. That's a lot of stuff. And you're still super young. Your body probably doesn't feel young anymore after all the changes.
After COVID and kind of, I've become one with this chair.
Right? Well, what are some things that you learned about yourself along that journey? And then what are some things that you learned? So there's always things that we can learn that we want to kind of pull into our arsenal. And then there's the stuff that we learn that we don't want to do. Could you give us a couple of both?
Sure. Okay. So let's go back to the beginning of the career as the addictions counselor. I'd say one thing I really learned about myself there is that I have a hard time leaving work at work. And it's ultimately why I ended up leaving that profession, because I had dedicated a large part of my studies to youth and adult correctional intervention, really thinking that I was going to be in this space. And, you know, my childhood, I wouldn't play just, you know, Barbies. I would play law with my sister.
Oh,
and
wow.
We would line up our teddy bears, and we would have, you know, oh gosh, we would have to present the evidence, and we would have these court cases. And this is really where I saw myself going. My sister became a lawyer and I was headed down this path. And it was actually devastating to realize that it was a really, really heavy, I say industry. It's not really an industry. I mean, the reality is like this touches so many lives and families and people. And at 19, I didn't have the life skills to separate work from work.
Right.
And I became so intertwined with wanting to help and not knowing how to fill my own cup and separate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked for something different, something lighter to temporarily just refocus and try and find myself amidst the weight of it all. And that's when I went to wedding planning. And so I realized there, I still can't leave work at work, but when I am enjoying what I'm doing and I feel that it is aligned with, you know, what I can contribute to this world, that it actually helps me refuel, it helps me recharge as opposed to kind of deplete my cup.
Right.
And wedding planning wasn't for me long-term, you know, it wasn't like, I'd never dreamed of being a wedding planner. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But I'd say one of the biggest tools that I've put in my arsenal since then is that I can actually do whatever I put my mind to.
Yeah.
I had no formal training for this. I decided I'm going to contact every single wedding planner in the city and I'm going to offer my services for free. I'm going to see if someone will take me for an internship.
Right.
I did 40 weddings that first summer.
Wow.
Unpaid.
Not messing around.
No.
Yeah.
And I learned, you know, I can pick things up really quickly. And I was kind of like an average kid in school. So being on the ground and seeing how quickly I could learn when it was something that truly lit me up was really great and came in handy as an entrepreneur. That opened the door to marketing. And again, and I did not study marketing and I really grew up in that space. And I'd say one of the things that I learned most in that chapter was the importance of communication. And
absolutely.
Really communicating from a place of understanding where the other person is at, understanding what their motives are, and not just coming at them with your asks, but really recognizing what will help them move the needle, what matters most to them, and positioning your asks in a way that is relevant.
Right.
And awesome. It's, yeah, I mean, these are the building blocks of really what you know, essentially built the foundation of me building my business. Right. And it was in this world of personal development and coaching and change management that I decided, you know, this is my sweet spot. It's helping yeah. people set goals. It's helping people accomplish the things that they never in their wildest dreams thought that they could have before, but with a little bit of guidance, they now know that, you know, they're capable. And there we go. That paved the path to Goalcast.
Oh man. I hear you talking, and it's everything to me. It screams people. You know, you didn't know anything. You really didn't know much about wedding planning, but you knew people. Mm-hmm. You know, at 19, feels like you knew people. Goalcast, you know people. Entrepreneurship, the real power grid in life is relationships. And you're just really good with people. That's kind of the common denominator with all of those, don't you think?
I do. And I love that you brought that up, because I had reached a point where I was like, well, like, who am I if not my titles and the, you know, the promotions and all the business cards, and like, who am I really with all that stuff removed? And I did this kind of reverse engineering where I looked at what is the common denominator and all the things that have made me truly happy. And it's exactly that. People is at the core.
Yeah. I love it. That's my juice too. Would you say that's your juice?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah. I love it. It's funny. I think you're also a really competitive person. You know, you're competitive.
Hang on a second. How do you know that?
Well, I've been stalking you a little bit. No, I think I read it or heard you say one time, and again, it stuck with me because I'm also competitive. And I think most people would tell you that I'm a very positive person, but I'm also really competitive. I joke that I spell fun W-I-N. I really like to win. So how do you juggle being the competitive person you are? Because I also find that interesting. Like when you're an entrepreneur, that's a really competitive market. Mm-hmm. And you're having to compete. You roll out of bed every day and you've got to compete. Like you're competing every day. When you went to Goalcast, how did that change for you? Like, how did competing change for you? Did you have a mind shift type deal when you went to Goalcast?
Oh, great question. I am very competitive. And although the entrepreneurial space is really competitive, especially the coaching industry, mm-hmm. because it's not even limited right now, like anyone and everyone can become a coach. And so right. you start to see that there's a little bit of oversaturation and a lot of people in the space that aren't really quite equipped to be coaches, if we're being honest.
Right.
And I really, my mindset shifted early when it was, I'm not actually competing with them. What I need to do is be obsessed with creating value for the people that I want to work with. Mm. And my competition became myself last year, myself the year before, and how am I continually raising the bar so that not only I continue to offer better, but they become better as a result of working with me, of knowing me, of, you know, having collaborated in some capacity. And that's the kind of thinking that I brought into Goalcast, which is, you know, we are also a competitive team. We have wildly ambitious goals, mm-hmm. and we're looking at companies like Netflix and Disney as far as our competition. And I mean, the company's been around just about 5 years. And if we didn't have that sense of complete obsession with value and impact for the people whose lives we want to touch, we would easily get swept away by the numbers game of the fact that we're nowhere near Netflix and Disney. But if we're focusing on the right things, then I think we're competing with ourselves. And the only thing that we're concerned about is doing better than we did before.
That's awesome. That is so my mantra. I absolutely, we always talk about out improving our previous best self. That's kind mm-hmm. of at the core of everything I do and the show. And I love that. Awesome. Do you think that, do you believe competition makes us better?
I believe, so I might not be saying it right because I've written it more than I've said it, but co-opetition is something that I believe more in, and it's about collaborating to create mm-hmm. greater impact. I think if we are competing straight me versus you, one of us has to win, one of us has to lose, I'm not really into that game. Mm-hmm. I think it serves our egos more than our communities. Right. And if we're looking at co-opetition and kind of collaborating, bringing our skills together, it doesn't mean that we have to do all things in unison, but it's who can I introduce you to that will get you ahead here? What resource can you share with me that will get me ahead here? So that collectively we're building a network who want to see each other win, who want to help our collective communities. And ultimately, again, I'm going to come back to being obsessed with delivering value and impact. Because that when everyone wins, that's when we win. If it's just you winning against me or vice versa, I mean, it's we're playing a small game.
Right. And it's funny, and I love your perspective. I'm in the same boat. I call that the double win, and I actually stole that from someone else. Where you add value by adding value to others, you add value to your own life.
Right.
And man, if everyone could get that, I wish I could have gotten that when I was 19. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could have gotten that earlier. Where the more you give, the more you serve, the more happy you generally are. I love that concept. You talked about ego. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you talk, and that's a great topic. You've talked about how ego was kind of sabotaging you early on.
Yeah, what recently. Did you mean by
that? Yeah, talk to me, sister. Recently. Yeah.
Oh, girl. We can talk. So we have these things that kind of recur, I think, in our lives. And recently I was faced with one of them, and it was leading up to the decision to join Goalcast. And I had looked at everything that I had just spent the better part of 5 years building, being my company, my brand, my reputation, my community. And I had this like a little bit of an identity crisis. When the offer to join Goalcast came around, I thought I can't put the brakes on what I've built. I mean, I worked so hard. I have these titles and these accolades that are hard earned. People look up to me. People are waiting for my next move.
Right.
And I was like, oh, get over yourself. What are you doing? If you're only in it for the optics and for what people are thinking and perceiving, then like, that's not what you got in it for.
Right.
And I had to really strip away, like, who am I if not those things? Who am I if not the best-selling author, if not the TEDx speaker? And why did I embark on those goals or those journeys anyway? And it came down to, you know, as you nailed it, people and impacting people. And I think I kind of had this light bulb moment where it was like, I have so much pride in the titles and accolades to actually accept a job offer that is, I can't sleep. I'm so excited at the thought of it.
Right.
And I'm thinking of it every waking moment. And I'm saying, no, thank you. Because I have this reputation to uphold.
Right.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I had this moment where I was like, I can do this one client, one webinar, one company at a time, or I can do this at scale with a company, with a mission even greater than mine, with a team that will do nothing but excel the impact that I can have. And what I will learn from this group of people, that's what really excited me. It's like, I've been working on my own for a little bit, and to work with a team that whose mission is to change the world. Like, come on, I'd be silly not to. And I was able to kind of leave my ego at the door and say, you're not doing it for you. You're doing it for the world. And like, so let's take the opportunity that allow you to have the biggest impact.
Right. Oh man, you love it. Huge. So there's tons of people out there that their egos do get in the way of, like, say, communication. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about communicating. Their ego gets in the way. Do you have any suggestions on how there's people listening right now? Like 85% of the world is unaware that they're unaware.
Mm-hmm.
You have any suggestions on how to convince someone like that their ego is, that maybe they got all the tools in the shed. Like, they're sharp as a tack. They have great personality. They potentially could be a rock star, but their ego is in the way of communicating and putting a fence line around themselves unknowingly, can't form those relationships. You got any advice on how to approach those type of people? Because we probably have a lot of listeners on right now that can think of someone right now that fits that bill, but they don't know how to talk to them. You got any ideas?
That's tough, because I think recognizing that ego is perhaps part of the problem requires a lot of self-awareness, and it requires you to see outside yourself in how How am I impacting others? How am I being perceived by others? And not in a way of how will this make me look good in the eyes of others, but rather how is my presence making other people feel? And so I think, you know, before we can even tackle ego and how to have that conversation with someone who might have an ego problem or might be struggling with their ego in some capacity, is to suggest, you know, and I did this with a former boss. It needed to be handled with care, to be honest, because people get defensive and, you know, when you challenge their way of doing things, there's a little bit of, you know, feathers that are ruffled.
Oh yeah.
And so there was an example in one of my past roles when I was initially getting into marketing, and I had suggested to my boss at the time, who was really hierarchical, kind of top-down direction, what I say goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I made this suggestion, you know, have you ever had a chance to pause and look around the room in people's reaction when you deliver such information? And I was in a position where I'm comfortable saying these things, and I know that that doesn't come easily to everyone, but I, again, recognizing their motive, I think that's one of the things that really, really has to come first. What I knew he really cared about was productivity. And so I positioned it through the lens of, I really think the team would be more productive with a different delivery style. Mm. Then I paved the path to, have you ever noticed their body language when you bring up such topics? Oh, Nola, what do you mean? Why are you looking at body language?
Right.
Like, people will tell you if they're not happy. Yeah. And so, well, just try it, you know, like not enforcing it, just kind of like putting it out there through the lens of his motivator. And he realized that no one would ask questions unless prompted. No one would disagree unless he asked. And even still, those disagreements would come in candy coated, sugar coating of like, well, whatever you think is best, boss, kind of thing.
Right, right.
And with a little bit of encouragement and saying, I wonder what would happen if you opened the floor, if you didn't jump straight in with your agenda and you let people like see where they would lead the meeting.
Yes.
And being mindful that change doesn't happen overnight, and recognizing why you want that person to change in the first place. Because if it's for self-serving reasons, then there's probably your own ego that you need to check in on.
Right.
But if it's for the greater good, then with that knowledge, you can communicate to that person that there might be another way of trying things to get the best out of the group, whether that's your family, whether that's your peers, your colleagues, whatever, you know, community members, whoever that might be.
That was good. Holy cow. Really rock star. When you do go to Starbucks there, I see you got your cup. What's your flavor, sister?
Oh gosh. You know, I actually don't like coffee. This was just the biggest cup I could find that would hold the most water.
Nice. I'm not a coffee guy either. I'm a tea guy.
I love tea. So I love my tea with milk and honey.
Oh, I see you working with a little milk. All right. Mm-hmm. Might have to try that out.
Like the Royals, apparently.
Ooh. Yeah. I got it. While we're off topic here, on the topic of competitive, I wanted to ask you, what board games should I not play with you? When's it going to get a little bit cray-cray with Samantha?
There's no game that won't get cray-cray. We can do Monopoly. We could do Jenga, Connect Four. Bring it, baby.
Nice. All right. I'll have to keep that in mind. Games to crush Chris in. Done. All right. So on the topic of goals, I am super jealous. I love what you do. You hear a lot of different types of goals. You're into real goals.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of dive into that? Explain to our listeners what the real is, and then why real goals? I mean, you hear SMART goals. I've heard multiple variations of SMART goals, and there's a million different types of books out there with goals.
Mm-hmm.
What's your love for real goals? Why that?
Oh, goodness. I'll get to that. I want to rewind the clock just a little bit. Okay. Don't be jealous. This is what cooperating is all about. Oh. Is whatever college I know, whatever people I know, whatever I've been able to do, that is accessible to you, my friend, whatever you need. I've got your back.
I just love it. It gets me so excited. I'll listen to you, like, impacting the world, like branching out, growth, learning from others. I mean, that's amazing stuff. That's the sexy stuff.
I mean, that is the sexy stuff. That's the stuff that like connects the brain to the heart,
Yes.
which I think is so, so needed. And it's really at the foundation of the real goals. It's really about connecting head to heart, which sounds a little fluffy. And I would say at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, I was just like, who needs emotions?
Right.
Strategy and logic and planning. And I quickly realized that, you know, planning alone is not enough, because the SMART goal method is one that I actively used in business and personal projects and found really to be quite effective, but not all the time. And I realized that when I wanted to work on goals bigger than me, bigger than I thought possible, the method kept failing, like it kept falling flat. And when I went through a similar kind of reverse engineering process and seeing what is the common denominator and what it is I wanted to do, or what it is that really like lit my soul on fire, I did a similar thought process for behind every accomplished goal and every time in which I truly felt successful, what was at the core of that accomplishment? And there were four things. And this essentially is the four pillars of the real goals. It's that the goals I set for myself were resonant. So they were completely anchored in my mission, in my values, in the value that I trusted I could bring to others, and the value that I wanted to feel and have in my life. The second pillar is empowering. And that's about recognizing how you want your goals to make you feel. So this was a big lesson for me. It's not just about what does success look like, the six figures, the house, the title, the family, the white picket fence, whatever that might be. But what does success feel like? Because there are going to be days when you embark on this Herculean task or mountain of a goal, and it's going to suck. Like, it's going to be hard. And the goal needs to be anchored in emotion. It needs to be anchored in something real, so that on the days where you wake up and you don't want to do it, you're going to have something bigger than you calling at you, pulling on your heartstrings, saying like, you've got to do this. The third pillar is actionable, and actionable is really about breaking it down into bite-sized chunks, knowing what you can do today, this week, this month, next month, to keep the momentum going. And it really is about momentum, because when you start to gain traction and you have this kind of domino effect or snowball effect, and you see that the more you do, the more you can do, the more you realize that you are truly capable of doing anything. You are in fact limitless. And the fourth and final pillar is lucrative. And lucrative is about identifying what's in it for you. And I realized that some of the goals that I had set for myself that I wasn't achieving was because I was setting them for other people. I was setting them for my family. I was setting them for my partner. I was setting them for my clients. And there was nothing in it for me other than to make them happy.
Have I got to stop. Have you been like, are there cameras in my room? Or have you, I feel like you've been stalking me and stealing my story.
Well, I don't know. This is in print Quebec, a few years.
You're my Quebec twin over there.
Yeah, I feel like our hair is close, you know?
Wow. Okay. Sorry. I love it.
It's all good.
Lucrative. Really cool. And I'd say 50% of those who made a New Year's resolution goal, if they're not already quit, they'll be done by the end of this month. And 90% will probably be done before the end of February. How you talked about emotions. Should people tie emotions to their goals?
I believe so. I believe so, because when we don't have emotions, when we're not looking at it through the lens of how will this make me feel, we can end up on the hamster wheel of success, of benchmarks, of achieving, and constantly going after the next best thing without ever feeling successful or like we've achieved what we wanted to achieve. And I think that is largely because we don't know what success feels like. We haven't taken the time to look inward and say like, what would actually make me happy? Not what would make my family happy, not what I'm taught happiness looks like, but what is it truly that I want right now that would fill my heart, that would fill, you know, that will fulfill me intellectually. And really allow me to walk the earth as a well-rounded person. And I think absent emotion, we're just following a glorified checklist, which to me isn't a goal. It's a to-do list.
I love that. I mean, I'm the same way. If you can't feel it, it's really hard to retain it in any context. If whether you be studying for a test or a bar exam or a relationship or goals, if it isn't heart centered, you really don't have any reason to hang on to it.
Like
there's no reason to hang on to it if you're not heart centered. I love it. So
Can I actually share a quick story?
Yeah, go for it.
So I started my business with the SMART goal method, and for the life of me, it wasn't taking off as I had imagined. And I have a marketing background and I have, mm-hmm. A business background. And so I have the building blocks.
Yeah.
And I had this, for those that can see right now, I had a whiteboard behind me and I had it wasn't a whiteboard. It was actually a Bristol board that I taped because I was dirt poor at the time and couldn't afford a whiteboard on the wall. And I drew a thermometer and I said, I want to make $100,000 in my first year of business. And every launch flopped. My messaging wasn't resonating. Nothing I was doing really hit home. And then I stopped to think and realign and recenter. And this is before the real goal method, before I'd really started to infuse emotion in it. And then I really got to the core of, I started with resonant, like, what are my values? What is it that I want to have pulled through in my offerings, in my coaching, in my consulting practice? And then how do I want to feel? And what I realized is that I want to help people take inspired action. And the messaging and my efforts were really about driving dollars as opposed to helping people. And so I scratched out the dollar figure, put a little stick figure up there, and I revised my goal to impact 100,000 people in my first year. Yes. And I knocked it out of the park. I came in 10,000 short of my financial goal, but it was a complete perspective shift in how I set it. And it's all because I put emotion at the center.
And so much more gratifying, I bet.
Hugely, huge.
I mean, not even close.
Because people were in it for the right reason. I wasn't in it to close and convert. I was in it to impact.
Yes, that is awesome. Yeah, I've kind of shifted that way too. In regards to, I don't keep track of numbers. I'm keeping track of impacts. Even my contact list, like as you know, you gather all these contacts and all that stuff. But it's really more about impacts.
Mm-hmm.
How big of my can my list of impacted people be this year? I love that. Well, before we only got like 5 minutes left, and then I am
pressure's on,
crushing you to the curb, Chris. Just giving you the heave ho.
Had enough with me. I get it.
That's right. I mean, anyway, a lot of things flowing here. Maybe I don't need. I think this tea has a little too much caffeine in here. Do you think people should change their habits or set new goals first?
Ooh. I mean, I think they kind of go hand in hand. I think you need to be aware of your habits. I think you need to be aware. What I like to do is a pre-mortem. So I like to think of what could possibly go wrong and then plan accordingly.
Okay.
And some of those things are outside my control, like the economy, like COVID.
Yeah.
And some of those things are entirely within my control, like time management, like the way I communicate with people. And so when you recognize intrinsically what are some of the things that block you from your success, you can work on those habits simultaneously as you're working towards your goal. But I do think that strong habits will promote success. And I think that you will be even more successful if you're self-aware in what habits you have that will contribute or hinder your progress.
Right. Yeah. I'm kind of the same way. All these people, one of my theories is that you have all these people that are setting these new goals right now, but they're setting these new goals without changing the habits that they had before. They got these great ideas, and they might even be realistic ideas. Like they might be attainable and all that jazz, but they're not attainable because they're really not changing their habits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of a systems/habit guy.
I'm a sucker for good systems.
Yeah.
I think that as long as you're willing to iterate on your systems, and if they're no longer serving you, having the wherewithal to say, the system's got to change. Because I got stuck in the system for, several times for too long because I was too friggin' stubborn.
Yeah.
To admit that it wasn't working.
Well, you're stubborn, but you're also super committed. You're a go-getter. Sure. You're a go-getter, yeah. And you're competitive. You had the ego rocking. But, you know, all really good people in any business, I think, have a little, I think you have to have a little ego.
Like you I would
have,
agree.
You have to have a little arrogance, like within reason. I think, you know, you can't cross that threshold of being too arrogant and all that jazz. But I'd imagine you are such a committed person to being so successful. Like when you set your mind to something, you are pedal to the metal. Like you're putting your foot on the gas. Is that pretty accurate? I mean, that's
100%.
Yeah.
That couldn't be more me. Yeah. I feel like every horoscope, fortune cookie, I mean, anything that would come my way, I feel it would pick up on that energy. And I think that the reason I've been so successful is not the secret formula, is not even the real goals template or framework, but it's the fact that I'm so concerned with leaving this world better than when I came in, that I realized that when I do better, when I succeed, I bring people with me. You know, a rising tide lifts all boats, I think is the quote. And that is what I want to do, is I want to lift all boats. I want to see all people rise. And so I have no shame in, you know, in confidence, in succeeding, in my competitiveness. When I win, we all win.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. It sounds like you're seeking a lifestyle for not just yourself, but for everybody.
I think so. I'd like to think so.
Yeah. All right, Jenga queen. we got 30 to 45 seconds left.
Yep.
30 to 45 seconds where you can talk to our audience about how can they out improve their previous best self. 30 to 45 seconds to speak to them on how can they out improve their previous best self.
All right, real quick. So draw an X axis, a Y axis. You've got kind of four quadrants here. I want you to map out the priorities that you've set for yourself, the things you want to accomplish. And what you're going to do is you're going to gauge which ones are the highest in value for you, bring you the most value, and what brings your community the most value. And you're looking at the top right quadrant here. Anything that is high in value for you, high in value for them, these are the things that will help you outperform your last self.
Oh, this is why you're big city.
This is it.
You know, you look like this really nice person, like this really sweet little thing, but I'm thinking if we were playing like beach volleyball or Jenga or some sort of game, you could easily grow horns out and turn into this little pit bull and come after me.
Savage, but I'll tell you, my Achilles heel, I have no balance. So any game that would require me standing on my own two feet, actual physically standing on my own two feet, you could knock me over in a heartbeat. So
I would crush you and Twister.
Yes. Easily.
All right. Easily. Cool beans. Well, hey, I know that you're a big deal and you got lots of stuff going. You've got your own awesome podcast, The Catalyst. How can people get in touch with you?
Everything you need to know is at SamanthaChris.com. You'll find all the social handles, the link to the book, to the TED Talk, to the podcast. And I would really love if you'd check in on it. Let me know what you think.
Awesome. I really, really appreciate you, little lady. I hope you make this a great day for you.
Likewise.
Take care.